TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Catherine Sneed, The Garden Project. When prisoners in the San Francisco County Jail asked to remain in jail beyond their release date, prison authorities, the sheriff, and Catherine Sneed, who started the gardening project that prisoners did not want to leave, all realized that they had created a success, a model, or a mystery. Catherine Sneed credits John Steinbeck. In Grapes of Wrath, he shows that there's hope even in abject poverty, as long as the connection to the land can be restored. The way in which she has connected land, the growing of organic food, and the resolution to hunger, addiction, unhealthy food, and crime has become a model not just for prisons, but for society at large. The 1992 Garden Project in San Francisco just celebrated its 30th anniversary. It started inside the county jail 10 years earlier, but Catherine Sneed moved the project beyond the prison walls to connect with released prisoners and then with youth before they even became involved with the law. And that is the important difference to prison garden projects elsewhere. Most of them remain isolated behind prison walls, and released prisoners have no easy way to connect with land and food. I first met Catherine Sneed at the annual EcoFarm conference in Asilomar, California, in 1998. She had been asked to give the opening night address, which I will play for you again in a moment. Pleased and happy that 15 years later, a good project has not only remained alive, but has grown and made a difference. It was not all easy for Catherine Sneed. She was pregnant when she hitchhiked from Newark, New Jersey, to San Francisco in the early 70s to enroll in law school. As young African-American woman, she could have become a target for a racist, but she made it safely. When one of her professors, Michael Hennessy, became sheriff of San Francisco, he asked her to join his staff. She left law school and began work as a counselor at the San Francisco County Jail. When she was hospitalized in 1982 with a life-threatening kidney disease, Hennessy came to say goodbye. And according to Sneed, she then asked permission to begin a gardening program at the county jail, which, she says, Hennessy could not refuse, since she was not expected to live. She credits her own recovery to the energy she received from the permission to begin that project, and also to the good food she had begun eating once she became aware of the hazards of industrialized food. Hennessy kept his word and became her biggest supporter. The prison bureaucracy came around when Catherine Sneed began working with 300 prisoners a day in two-hour shifts of 60. Prisoners liked the work, and the garden in jail became productive enough to fund programs outside jail. And when they compared the recidivism rates of those who worked with her to the rest of the prison population, they began seeing a noticeable difference. Fewer of the gardeners returned. In her opening speech for the EcoFarm conference in 1998, 6 years into the garden project, you can see clearly how her passion and empathy goes to embrace all the circumstances of the lives of those who may or may not end up in jail or return to jail. Here's Catherine Sneed.
It's a real honor to be here to talk to farmers and to talk to gardeners about what you know already, that gardens and farms help people. They help people not just by feeding people, but they help people to live. And that's what I've seen in the years since I have been working at the San Francisco County Jail. There are three phases to our program. The first phase is when people are actually in the jail serving their sentence. Most of the people in our jail are between the ages of 18 and 35. Most of them have never had a job before. Most of them haven't finished high school. Most of them are, as in most jails and prisons throughout this country, are there for drug addiction or alcoholism. But the common denominator is that we're talking about poor people. I've worked for the Sheriff's Department now almost 18 years. And one thing that I have yet to see is someone in our jail who has money, who comes from money, who has resources, who has alternatives. For the most part, when we talk about communities and we talk about changing systems, not just in urban areas, we're talking about communities where there aren't alternatives, where crack selling is the business that happens in a community. That's a crime, I think, and a crime against all of us, not just against the victim or the people that are buying the drugs. We throw all sorts of numbers around about how much it costs to keep people in jail, but I've yet to see an accurate accounting because they're not looking at the cop, the judge, the probation officer, what happens to the family. They're not looking at these things. Instead, we're talking about how much does it cost to keep someone in jail, feed them, clothe them, get them back and forth from court. $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. Some of the people that I work with and most of the people that are in county jails throughout the country have been there before and will continue to come back until something happens. Usually that something is death, or maybe they'll graduate and go on to prison. Seldom does that cycle get stopped. It just continues and continues. And I guess for me, a gardener, what I've seen in working in the garden and working with these people is that the cycle can be stopped very easily when you give people an alternative to what their life has been. The community where our garden is has 58,000 families. There is one food co-market, and most of the vegetables come in these bags. That's the only market that this community has. And a community, for the most part, that's poor, so there aren't a lot of cars. So instead of going down to this piece of market, instead, they go to the mom-and-pop stores that aren't really mom-and-pop, but the corner stores. And they buy those potato chips. And then we wonder, why is there so much addiction in these communities? I know that drug addiction and nutrition is connected. There's a reason why people are turning to crack and have turned to crack in these communities. And I think there is the crime. And particularly, I think that at a time when people are looking for ways to survive, they're looking for, what can I do? How can I feed my family? How can I feed myself? I've seen people who can't read and write get inspired by growing food and go on and get a GED. The other day, Felix Ramirez, who's 22 years old, who began coming here when he was 11 years old. Felix came to me the other day and he told me he got his GED. To me, that's a miracle, considering when Felix left our jail 3 years ago, he didn't have a place to live. He had the small bag of stuff that he'd accumulated while he's in the jail. Felix has gone from our program in the jail to our garden program in the city as an employee to now being on our tree corps. Felix has learned what street trees need, how to maintain them, how to do pruning. But most important, Felix is inspired by these trees. He's become inspired enough to get his GED. He's become inspired enough to stop selling and using drugs and killing himself. This is a young man who, believe me, has not had many opportunities. Standing on the street trying to survive at 12, 13, in the mission in San Francisco, no one took care of him. No one's nurtured him. So tell me why he's learned to nurture. And I'll tell you, he's learned it by caring for the trees. And because he's learned that, he won't go back to jail. I'll bet you. I've seen many Felixes. You know how much I pay Felix to be in our tree corps? It's $8 an hour. Do you know how much we paid to keep him in jail? Back and forth since he was 11, 12? You add it up. It's a lot of money. Felix could have been to Harvard a couple of times. I've decided that I'm going to be sure that people understand that while we're putting money into places like jails, we're stealing money, we're hurting communities, and we're not telling the truth. I'm dedicating myself to that, to make sure people know. But also, guess what? I'm not going to wait around until the government or businesses or this liberal or that right-wing person helps us. We're going to help ourselves. And the funny thing is we're going to help ourselves the way you help yourself, by growing things, by feeding people, by learning to take care of the earth, by learning to take care of communities. It makes more sense to take Maria off the street and offer Maria, a woman who's was off and on the street since she was a teenager. It makes more sense to give Maria an opportunity to plant trees, to work in the garden. Because when Maria's planting trees in the mission, people who were her tricks, or people who bought drugs from her, or she bought drugs from, they see her planting those trees. And they say, wait a minute, if Maria can do that, I can do that. I don't have to throw my life away. And I think as farmers and as gardeners, you all know what that is. Right now, we are dealing with our lives in the organic farming industry. Family farms are being looked at as, okay, how can we squeeze more money out of them? I think it's really time for us to dedicate ourselves to making organic farming something, organic gardening and organic food, something that is available to the mainstream, to poor, to people of color, to all people. We started out with one little garden, a half acre, in Hunters Point in San Francisco. One, I think it's a Superfund site, Hunters Point is. We're fortunate where our garden is not very near the Superfund site, but we're still right there. San Francisco's poorest community. We started there. The 25 people that come there every day, for the most part, live in this community. A community that has 75% unemployment. 85% of the young men between the ages of 16 and 30 have been in and out of custody, have never worked before. That's where our garden is. People ask me, well, have you had a problem with vandalism in your garden? We've never had a problem with vandalism in our garden, and that's because most of the people that live around our garden don't recognize the stuff in the ground as food, because they don't know that lettuce and onions grow in from the ground. And it's funny, but it's really sad. It's really sad when people think potato chips are, you know, the way potatoes are, or what happens at McDonald's to potatoes. That's it. I mean, that's sad, but more important than it being sad, again, I know that the very poor nutrition that is a factor in poor people's lives produces the health problems and the addiction and a whole slew of issues in these communities. And so we can talk about, okay, let's teach them about food. Let's to explain to them how they can eat better. That's so false when there are no markets in these communities. There's no place to get real food in these communities. In San Francisco, there's not a lot of places that have vacant land, but in Hunters Point, there is vacant land. And there's people who are unemployed. What I've tried to do is connect these two. Connect the unemployed to vacant land. And with the 25 people that are working in our program now, We pay them $7 an hour, $7.15 an hour. And people ask me, well, does that keep them from selling drugs? Drugs is so lucrative. That's such mess. People that sell drugs, for the most part, are barely supporting their addiction. But yes, it does keep them from going back to jail, for the most part. Not for everyone, but for the most part. Given an alternative to selling or using drugs and surviving on the street, people jump at that $7.15 an hour. Every day, all day long, I have people coming to me asking for jobs. That's the hardest part of my job. Because I know when I say no, I don't have a space for you. I know where they're going. They're going back to the street, they're going back to the crime, they're going back to where they don't want to be. And at the same time, we're putting money into all sorts of other stuff when it's clear people want to work. It's also clear to me from the number of seniors and families that come to our garden daily to get food, to the centers in these communities where we take food and give them. People tell me, well, they won't, you know, if you give them this fresh stuff, they won't use it. At a center that we take vegetables to every week, the woman has people lined up to get the kale, to get the Swiss chard. And unfortunately, so many people don't even know how to cook it, to have no experience cooking fresh vegetables. So what we've tried to do in a very small way is to cook and feed people. Say, hey, this is what Swiss chard looks like cooked, and it tastes pretty good. And the parents, the mothers, the fathers, they come back and get it because it's free, because it's good. My goal for this year is to make sure that centers all over the city are able to get our food. And as much as people say, Catherine, you got to be like a business person and sell this stuff, I'm not selling kale and Swiss chard to people who survive on less than $100 a month to feed a couple of kids. I'm not selling it to them. I'm going to give it to them. And I'm going to give them a job if I can, when I can. Because I think this is how change happens. The other part of our project is, as I mentioned, the Tree Corps. We've planted thousands of trees throughout San Francisco since 1992. It took me 10 years to get the city of San Francisco to say it was okay for us to do it. The only time that I've been called nigger bitch to my face was by the union members who blocked our trucks for months when we first got the contract. They felt that we were taking their jobs. It was a real struggle for me because I support unions. But I don't support people who don't live in San Francisco, who live outside of San Francisco, who have no love or interest in their job, who are just doing their time, basically, stealing money from the city also, as far as I'm concerned, saying to people of color, no, you don't get a chance. So, since 1992, it's been very difficult, but we've planted a lot of trees. But more important than planting trees, like I said, we've planted hope. We've planted the belief that communities can be changed. There's no reason why the children in Hunters Point, why their schoolyards look like Beirut or someplace. Devoid of flowers, devoid of trees, devoid of anything living. Jonathan Cazole, in his numerous books, have talked about what happens in urban schools. I think it's because they look like jails and the people treat the kids like they're in jail. It's not a lot, but the garden that we planted in at Bret Hart School changed a dust bowl where the teachers couldn't open the windows because the dust would blow into this classroom. It now is a perennial English border. And some of the teachers said, the kids will destroy it. Well, I've taken a lot of time to get donations of basketball-resistant plants for that garden. The salvia greggii is a monster on its own. But more important to me, when I go places in Hunters Point, children come up to me and they say to me, I remember when you came to our school, you brought all these people, and one day you made a garden. I'm in middle school now. Will you come and do that at my school? That means a lot to me. It means a lot to Paradise, a member of our program from Samoa. It means a lot to him that his kid goes to that school. And kids who his kid goes to school with, they remember when Paradise was out selling PCP. And now they see him rolling up to the school in a steak bed truck that has big sheriff stars on the side filled with pumpkins to give pumpkins to each kid in the school. That to me is change. That to me is doing something. When teachers call us, they start calling us around the beginning of September, asking, do you have pumpkins? To see the people in our program get excited to make sure that the pumpkins are doing okay, so that we're going to be able to get them out to all the schools. I mean, you can't imagine what it's like to see Paradise and those folks carry those pumpkins. Our office, our donated office space is on the second floor. So we decided this year that we would take a lot of the pumpkins downtown where the office is, bring them up and store them in this big classroom. But it meant that we'd have to bring them up all these stairs. So they're bringing them up to all these stairs, back and forth, for weeks, to make sure that the kids got pumpkins. It was the most blessed, there's no other word for it to me, thing that I've seen, to see that happen. And to see the kids, this is one of the kindergarten classes, they were at nap time. The teacher said, I know, we'll just lay them out on the floor for the kids. And so we laid them out on the floor like a pumpkin patch. And the kindergartners came out and they just jumped up and down and screamed when they saw the pumpkins. And it was just beautiful. It was just so beautiful. But the best thing was that these kids now saw, because they know, they knew Paradise was selling drugs. But now they see Paradise grow with these pumpkins. They see Paradise making sure that the perennial English border doesn't have weeds and that the daffodils get turned so that they can come back. And to me, this is how you provide alternatives to people in a real, regular, everyday way. It's been very tough for me because, as I said, people want to be a part of this program. And the thing that is the hardest to come by is raising money for payroll. Again, something that the gardeners and the farmers can relate to. It's very difficult to make a payroll based on whether or not some rich person's going to give us a grant. And for years, that's how we survived. This year is going to be different. This year, the sheriff of San Francisco gave us a lease of 14 acres of land at the San Francisco County Jail, where I began the program in the first place. And now it means that we're going to be able to sell the produce that we grow there. And we're going to bust our ass to sell to bring in as much money as we can. Last year we started going to the farmers markets. That was quite an experience. Because let me tell you, no one gets by our stand without someone who has some selling experience saying, you gotta try this spinach. You gotta try it. And we sort of stand out at the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market. Just a little. I love it when people with their designer clothes ask George or any one of the participants, how do you cook kale? They'll tell them that. But again, what we're trying to do is we're trying to, in a very small way, make some changes. And it's been by growing this food, by growing these flowers, by planting trees, by getting food to people who don't have food. 800 people have been employed through this nonprofit, the Garden Project, since 1992. To me, that's 800 people that haven't been in jail. The sheriff did a recidivism study. If you look at who came back and who didn't, it's pretty obvious people in our program didn't come back because they didn't need to. It's very important to me that people understand that we're connected, as we know, that we're connected to paradise. What happens to the people in our program affects us all. What's happening affects us all. I want you to say to other people, there is a way to take people from places like jail, help them to get basic skills, help them to get very basic support so that they can take care of their families. That's all they want. And the way that makes sense is in a garden, because the garden helps them in a way that a counselor can't help them. Believe me, I'm not holding their hand and wanting to know what happened in their life. I know, for the most part, what their lives have been like. The only nurturing and care that they get comes from weeding the onions, crowing the garlic, harvesting, getting the food to people, selling the food to restaurants. I think that gardens have been overlooked in this last century as places where social change can happen. And I hope to help to change that.
That was Catherine Sneed, recorded at the 1998 EcoFarm Conference in Asilomore, California. Catherine Sneed heads the Garden Project in San Francisco. Founded in 1992, it provides job training and support to former offenders through counseling and assistance in continuing education. The Garden Project connects at the same time to the communities around. Check out their website at gardenproject.org. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. This is also a celebration of 20 years on the air of TUC Radio as independent free radio production, with a huge thank you to all of you who have donated over the last two decades. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.